You're listening to WWBC Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7. We are also heard on the World Wide Web. All you do is you put in WWBC, you will see a website that comes up and you hit listen live and you can hear our show. We are heard in countries, not just here in the United States, we're heard in Indonesia, India, Canada. We even have listeners who listen to us in Ireland. And it feels good to be able to give back to our world, its peoples, its cultures, and at the same time leave a good footprint behind right here on planet Earth. On every Monday from 1 to 2, my co-host Ellen O'Neill, myself, our friend Allie, and our friend Danny White and runs our board, we sit here and we talk to people right here in Brevard County, Florida, as well as all over the United States and the world, and we speak about things that are going on right here, what we like to call kitchen table topics. Whether you want to open a business, whether you want to learn about savings, some people want to talk about the stock market, some people want to talk about voting. We have candidates that come in because they're running for office. We also have advocates for clean air and water and sunshine and people who talk about the Indian River Lagoon. And we speak to them here because we give folks a platform on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends to speak and make the world a better place. And we all have experience. We speak to our elders. We speak to our family members. And we can give back from what we have learned in life. And so today's no different. I've got a gentleman who is supporting one of the candidates. Mr. Zohran Kwame Mamdani is one of the candidates who's running for office in New York City for the mayor's race. And I've got a supporter of his, Mr. Ted Gibson, is calling in. He's an actor, a producer, and a writer, and he's based in New York City. And he is supporting Mr. Mamdani. So I've got him on the phone in a minute. We will go to him. We also have the second segment. We've got an author. Her name is Tamiko Tammy Barber, and she's an educator, and she's going to be calling in to speak about her books, A Father's Heart. And she's written another book called Broken But Restored. And her books, it really is about forgiveness and trying to understand family members when people's been through tragedy and had a lot of trials and tribulations to go through. So we'll talk to her in a little bit. But my co-host Ellen O'Neill is here in studio with us, and we're excited to speak with Mr. Ted Gibson and hear why he is supporting the New York State Assemblyman, Mr. Zohran Mamdani. So, Ted, take it away. Thank you for taking the time to call in from New York City on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Sita, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate you having me on your show to talk about why I'm in such support for Zohran. Briefly, I just wanted to start by saying that it's been a bit of a daunting, dark, kind of unsure time right now. And a lot of New Yorkers, especially people within my circles, are looking to someone for leadership and for guidance, and in a form of leadership that's led through compassion and empathy and aligns with a lot of our values. And this is why Zohran is so appealing to so many people in my circles and to me. It's it's so nice to see someone who's running for office on a campaign platform of progressivism, leading through the heart and reaching out to every New Yorker. And it's especially refreshing when we're constantly reminded with news of other folks who are in public office who may not be in it for the right reason or who might act like bullies with closed off minds and hearts. And it's so apparent if you're watching Zohran that he cares about every single New Yorker and he wants to truly know what is affecting every New Yorker. And so I think a lot of us feel truly seen and heard by him in a way that we haven't quite felt so by our previous representatives.
Yeah. And you know what? It is so refreshing in a time like what we're living through right now, when so many people are disillusioned and they say, oh, my vote doesn't count. And people feel like, oh, what's the use of voting, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat? They're fed up of wars. They're fed up of seeing homeless people on the streets. And people say, oh, well, there's homeless people, just walk on the other side. But Zohran decided, Mr. Mamdani, that he is going to do something about it. He's not talk. He's action. And when I saw your TikTok and I saw other people's TikTok in New York City and what Mr. Zohran is doing when he talks about people being hungry, when he talks about the taxi drivers, when he talks about people who are making ends meet, it resonates with folks. So tell us a little bit about the scene in New York City. Have you met Mr. Mamdani, and what is the electrifying motion around him?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So on Friday night, Zohran and his campaign were visiting all over New York. And in the evening, they were walking from the furthest uptown, most part of Manhattan, all the way down to Battery Park. And I happened to be going out to go see a movie that evening. And I was waiting outside the AMC movie theater on Broadway. And I see a crowd of people come by. And I recognize the shirts and the posters and the very familiar blue, yellow, red color scheme. And I recognize him instantaneously. And I was in complete shock because it was so amazing to see this gentleman who I've seen on my screen actually walking the street, meeting New Yorkers, shaking hands. This is the first time that I've had the chance to actually meet someone who I'm interested in supporting politically one-on-one. And I was swept into the crowd and somebody from his party took my phone and offered to take photos. And I had a wonderful chance to shake his hand and talk with him for about a block. And he saved me. He swerved me out of the way from walking into a scaffolding pole. So he instantaneously got my vote there.
Yes.
And he was so warm and embracing, and he introduced himself to me and I to him, and I felt truly seen and listened to in a way that I imagine so many other New Yorkers do when they are in his presence. I was standing outside the movie theater where there was a big poster for the upcoming Superman movie, and it almost felt like I met Superman with this gentleman who's running for office, giving so many folks who, as you said, are disillusioned, a newfound faith in the systems that we should have trust in and hope again.
Right. And you know what I see on TikTok is I see him a man of the people. Like you see him.
Absolutely.
He's with all the boroughs in New York City. He's at every person's church, synagogue, mosque. He's on the street. He's playing tassa drums. And for listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today, Mr. Mamdani was born in Kampala, Uganda. He moved to New York City at the age of 7, and he became a naturalized citizen. He's an American citizen. He graduated from college, and he's always been a person that's fighting for justice for everyone. And what I like about him is that his mother, Mira Nair, she is an award-winning filmmaker, and she made a film called Mississippi Masala, and us Indians in Trinidad and Tobago and all over the world, we actually love that film because she broke a lot of barriers about racism and hate and division with that film. And I think her son, he's a chip off the old block. But so what are some of the most important issues you see in this race with Mr. Mamdani? What are some of his stances that he has spoken about on his platform?
Absolutely. So as you say, he definitely appears to be a mayor for the people. All of his policies seem to be prioritizing people over profit, which is so reassuring to see. And as you were mentioning earlier, with the current unhoused population that we have in New York, he's planning on implementing a whole new department called the Department of Community Safety, which is going to be used to help tackle folks who are dealing with mental health issues and folks who necessarily the police should be prioritizing their efforts and their time somewhere else, keeping New Yorkers safe. I had a particular instance where I was on my way home from work one night. I was walking home because I wasn't able to afford enough tips to get a bus ride home, which under Zohran's policies could be a change with a new implemented free bus care system. And so as I was walking home, I see someone who is unconscious on the ground, I assume unhoused, and a group of police officers walked up being followed by a group of folks wearing orange t-shirts. And I saw that the folks wearing orange t-shirts were part of an organization to help those who were unhoused, provide water, provide any assistance that might be necessary. And just the contrast that I saw in behavior from them, from the police, shows the kind of compassion that I feel like New York deserves and that New York needs. And I feel like a lot of the policies that Zohran is trying to platform are pushing the ideas of helping your fellow New Yorker, this idea of reaching out and accepting and bringing in with this mindset of abundance over scarcity. You know, there's so much that can go around. And I think people get really daunted by the idea that he would be taxing larger corporations and the more wealthy citizens in New York. But to each their own, I completely respect it. But I personally feel that there's so many folks in this city and there's a lot of money to go around that some more taxation on corporations, which are making billions, and some of the far more wealthy citizens, I think some of those extra taxation, those monies being taxed, can go towards improving city spirit and each and every New Yorker. And I truly think if we can get every New Yorker to be secure with a sense of stable housing and childcare, or not having to worry about groceries, the cost of groceries, or being able to pay your rent or for transportation, that can only benefit the city as a whole. I think it will make it safer. I think people will not be worried about where they can get their next meal. And I can only imagine that in a society where people are healthier, happier, and taken care of, that the whole city will prosper. Right.
So one of the things that I loved about reading about on the website, which by the way is fantastic, if you know, for our listeners that are out there, make sure that you check this out. Freezing the rent on certainly unstabilized tenants. What does it mean to be a stabilized tenant or not a stabilized tenant? Does it just mean length of time that you were in the location when he writes that?
I believe so. I'm no expert on on the topic. However, I'm fairly certain that, you know, this has happened under previous mayoral terms, where I believe Eric Adams briefly froze the rent on stabilized apartments. And these are apartments where the rent, I believe, have been set at many, many years ago and have not adjusted accordingly to reflect the current housing rates. And even Mr. Mamdani, he lives in a rent-stabilized apartment. I believe he pays $2,300 as he shared for his one-bedroom in Queens. And he is, fully willing to put forth a policy that would affect him and where he would have to pay more money. And that is a smaller example of showing how he is thinking of others outside of himself and that he wants to support folks who aren't in the same position as he is.
Yeah, and he comes
well,
across,
and certainly adding the housing too. That was another one of the platforms building affordable
thing.
Housing.
Yes.
Right, and he comes across very empathetic. He's been there, he's done that, and he knows what's going on with the people in New York City. And I think he would be a mayor for all the New Yorkers. There's a lot of turmoil in the world and our country right now, and to have somebody with such a voice, and he can speak, let me tell you. He's such a
Absolutely.
Good speaker. I mean, any question they throw at him, It's like the guy's a walking dictionary or something. But I like when they try to hit him with socialism. But here's the thing. A lot of politicians walk around and take pictures with babies and, you know, different people, and they want to be seen in the front page. But the bottom line is, a politician should understand when they run for office, it is about the people. And Mr. Mamdani understands that. You can't say you support pregnant women, but then when a child is born, you don't care if the child has a place to live, daycare, the parents have insurance. I mean, the bottom line is, no one died and said that someone should have millions of dollars in the bank or even thousands of dollars, and somebody else is struggling for a slice of bread with some butter on it. I mean, let's be honest, right? And that's in New York, people are worried about the next day, what's going to happen. So what? If they ride a bus for free, so what? You know, what is the big deal? Yes. Why are they calling him a socialist when he's trying to take care of the people in the city of New York?
Well, and if we could finally take the bad connotation of socialism out of it, isn't it truly, you know, just being social? Isn't that what it's all about, the showing of kindness? I like getting back to the root of the word, where socialism meant that we all look out for each other and we don't necessarily always have to have government intervention, that we can take care of our neighbors and take care of our people without having all. And I have family. I have a business owner family and also New York City police officer family who is That's terrible.
They're all supporting Mr. Mamdani.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so talk to us a little. I mean, you're young, right? Ted, you are an actor, you're a producer, you're a writer. You are based in New York City. And I know people who are in your shoes and are working on Broadway, and they have 5-6 people in an apartment. And, you know, people are worrying, am I going to make the money for the rent? Will I have money for breakfast tomorrow? And so what? If the guy gives you a free ride on a bus, take it. So talk to us about your take on this whole, they're trying to slam in, he's a socialist Democrat and he's a progressive. Yeah. So what?
Of course. Yeah, I think a lot of folks throw around that label because it's been twisted and misconstrued. But, you know, time and time again, Zohran has stated that he is a progressive, which is how I align. And progressivism simply is a political idea and movement that advocates for social reform and improving the human condition through governmental change, social change. And it's frankly baffling to me that people can go twist themselves into all the mental gymnastics that they want to not want an improvement of the overall human condition. I think having a leader like Mr. Mamdani would greatly improve empathy throughout the city. There's a great sense of division right now. And I think we could all afford to have somebody who's leading by example, by reaching across and inviting others in and encouraging us to think outside of ourselves and towards others. Because I truly think that's what makes New York City so special as a city, where we have so many folks from so many different walks of life that makes the city so diverse and beautiful. And you can walk down the block and see so many different slices of life. And under Mayor Zohran, an idea to reach out to your neighbor and welcome them would, I think, bring back the idea of what makes New York, New York. And that's why I choose to stay here. That's why I love the city. And that's what makes it so appealing to me.
Right. And I saw on TikTok, there were a lot of young women who would like to start a family. And they're saying, look, I want to raise my family in New York City, but I'm concerned about the rent. I'm concerned about childcare. I'm concerned about health insurance. And I want this candidate who is showing us how we are going to have all of this. And we don't want the same old washed up politicians who all of us could see who's putting the money into their campaigns. I read today that former Governor Cuomo, the amount of money that's going to go into his campaign today just to run ads against Zohran Mamdani. And you know what saddens me is they said that some of the flyers, someone took a marker and they blackened the beard of Mr. Mamdani to make him look like, you know, like a horrible candidate. That's wrong. We are all Americans, whether we're Indian or Chinese or white or black or whether, no matter where we come from, we assimilate in this great country. We work hard and we pay taxes and we love the United States. And he has a right to run for office without people trying to do that to him and make him look like an evil candidate. So talk to me a little bit about what's going on there from the other candidates who are actually threatened by someone who wants to take care of the people in New York City. And the word there is absolutely in New York.
That's exactly right. So as you said, former Governor Cuomo, his super PAC has been receiving millions of dollars and has been using millions of dollars in order to tarnish the reputation or image of former or future Mayor Mamdani. And I don't have much of a social media following, but when I made this post of myself shaking Zohran's hand, I received such a flurry of comments that my friends who are a little more socially media attuned can have encouraged me that most of them are bots. But either way, the vitriol that has been coming through in my comments, the hatred, the Islamophobia, it's truly terrible. And the fact that if, you know, so many of these responses are made by bot accounts, somebody had to pay to create these accounts to spew this hateful language. And the only thing that I imagine would be worse than that is if these aren't bots and that these are truly people who have such hateful ideas. Right. Whereas this is simply someone who has, Mr. Mamdani has acquired more than $8 million in small to medium donations, not from super PACs, but just from citizens and New Yorkers. And I think it just shows the wide range support that he has from the people. And it's brought him so far where, not trying to get my hopes up, I've seen some really optimistic looking polling numbers that show that he might be starting to pull ahead.
He's going to pull this off, and I'll tell you why. He had to literally tell supporters, do not send me any more money. I'm good.
Absolutely.
I'm good.
Another crooked politician
would have said, keep sending the money and then save it to run for something else later on. But he said, shut it down. What he said was, tell your friends and family about me. Tell your neighbors about me. Knock on doors for me, phone bank for me, which I will be signing up if I can later. But, you know, there's also one where people are saying, oh, he said defund the police. He never said that. He said he will sustain the correct amount of police officers that they have in the department because he knows that public police officers play a role in public safety. And like all sheriff says here in our town, you have to be the top cop in your home. Mr. Mamdani is about the public as well as the private sector and all of us having a foundation in our homes for good citizens.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I completely agree with you that it's beyond important to feel safe in our city, and whether that means feeling physically safe by having a police presence in parts that might be less safe, or just knowing that there are people who are specifically qualified to handle any sort of mental unrest or emotional unrest that one might be feeling. I think New Yorkers will be able to feel safer in more than one sense of the word, and beyond feel safe, I think they'd feel hopeful and re-inspired by the city that they live in. And I think now more than ever, we as New Yorkers and we as Americans and citizens of the world, we just need to feel a little bit of hope right now. And I see that in Mr. Mamdani as a candidate. And that's why he has my support.
I think Ellen's going to jump in here. You have a question for him?
Well, it was really more about the Department of the Community Safety piece. It seems like it's, mobilized more of a volunteer effort. Is that, I haven't read enough into it to see. I see how it's that the anticipation of being funded and where the funds are going to be redirected into mental illness and certainly education and some other things, but what's the vision of the community safety program? Is it volunteer driven, or
I believe it is volunteer driven,
what was that Angels group
more than qualified,
like Red Angels or Black whatever that they kind of mobilized through the city and were protecting.
He's given people something to hope about that, right. And when one person stands up and say, "Let me join," another person would. It's like a neighborhood watch, right? Everyone is going to get involved and say, hey, this is my city. I have a great mayor. I am getting, you know, some of the service people in New York, they actually worry about, am I going to make enough tips to get on the bus and the subway and go home?
Right. And then to make matters worse, the other piece that he was cracking down on was bad landlords. So imagine being that person that's out there and you are paying $2,500 a month, but then you're going home to no heat or no electricity or whatever, whatever it happens to be. The landlords haven't fixed what they need to fix. So, you know, overall, from a social standpoint, too, I mean, how does it feel when you have to go to work in the morning and you can't take a shower?
Right.
You know,
in
a $2,500 apartment.
So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Mr. Ted Gibson. He's an actor, a producer, and a writer based in New York City. And I found him on good old TikTok.
Yay.
A wonderful video that he made supporting his candidate, Zohran Mamdani. And I think this guy should run to be president. I would love to tell people that don't be afraid of Hindus and Muslims and Christians and Jews and whatever denomination you are. Because Muslims are going to give you Zohran, probably going to make you some tea and give you some kebabs and rice. Don't be afraid of people. Because the truth is, those of us who are so passionate about living here in the United States and giving back and having a life with purpose, we mean good. And when he says, when people question him about, are you going to visit other countries around the world? He brings it right back to the people of New York City. So, Ted, talk to us a little bit about what are your friends and family saying about Zohran Mamdani?
Yes. So a lot of my friends are fellow creatives. They're also actors and they work in the theater and film world. And it's so refreshing, especially after the most recent presidential election, to have this hope shared within my circles, to feel like we can have faith in our political systems because there will be somebody who's running to actually focus about the city or the area that he's running for. There's during the debates for the upcoming Democratic primary, there have been a lot of questions or attempts to try to undermine Mamdani's loyalties or to question where they are. And it's really a shame if you take time to listen to his words, he's very straightforward that his priorities lie with the city. And as someone who is a New Yorker, and that's what I would want his focus on. I'm baffled by how he had so much time in the past few months and weeks to be almost everywhere in the city.
Because you know why? He loves New York and he loves New Yorkers and he loves every inch of the space and the infrastructure in New York. You can tell by listening to him and watching his body language. And you could tell that if people vote for Mr. Mamdani, they are not going to be sorry. I think it's going to, I tell you, I'm planning to come up for a weekend. I hope he wins. But now I wanted to say something about you, Ted, that for a listener, some of your work can be found on Hulu, Amazon, and on YouTube, Rabbit, the miniseries. It's just awesome that we found somebody like you to call in on our show. Talk to us a little bit. We only have 2 minutes left. Some people are saying that Mr. Zohran Mamdani does not have the experience to lead. I believe he does because he's going to be leading from his heart. What do you think?
I think everyone needs to start somewhere. You know, we all were folks who were professionals in their field, all had to start somewhere. And he just happens to be taking a very brave leap into a very public arena. And I think despite his inexperience, I think what we really need in New York is perhaps just a new perspective. I think it's time that some things changed. The city is changing. The New Yorkers we're growing, we're evolving. We've seen what has worked for our city. We feel in real time what is not working, what makes our lives harder and what makes it easier. And as you said, this is a candidate who's leading from his heart and from actually getting to know the New Yorkers who live there. He hasn't been living in Westchester the past few years, avoiding the day-to-day in New York like former Governor Cuomo has. He's actually taking the public transit to and from work. He walks through the neighborhoods and he shakes hands and he meets the people who he'd be representing. As you say, I think he is a future mayor for the people, and I couldn't be more proud to be supporting this man.
Yeah. And you know what? I do believe that he's best qualified for the position. And I am one of those people that I tend not to see people's race or color or religion. I see what they can offer as a human being and what they can do for humanity, because we are all supposed to leave this earth a better place than we found it. And if you 100%. All in New York can vote for him, and we can tell our friends and family to vote for him, because we do care. At the end of the day, when people pay their rent and they pay their car payment and they pay their insurance, and then they have to send a kid to school, and then they have to buy food, and then if somebody gives you a break with traveling expenses, if that's what people are worried about, that people are going to get a free bus ride, so what? Take the free bus ride, go to work, make your money, pay your taxes, and enjoy your vacation on planet Earth, right?
Amen. Yeah. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
So give us your website if someone wanted to look you up and look at the good works you're doing. And you know, we're so grateful that young people are energized
and
in
rallying.
This campaign,
yeah,
and rallying around this guy, because you are giving me hope here in Florida for us, for the young people here in Florida to find. We need more Mamdanis all over the United States. So give us your website.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for having me, Sita and Ellen. I really appreciate it. Folks can find my materials at www.tedgibsonacts.com. On Instagram, TikTok, my profile is Teddy Wex, W-E-X. I really appreciate you having me on the show. Thank you so much for everything.
Thanks. Well, that was a great interview. We're going to take a quick break, listen to our sponsors, and we'll be right back after these messages with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County and Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads. 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000. Or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accountant and a registered.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere on God's magnificent planet.
That's right. 1510WWBC.com. You can hit that listen live button on that page and get us on any one of your streaming devices. And then, of course, we archive all of the shows there under the on-demand button. Of course, those are on Mondays, every Monday, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then from there, you can download it And then we post it on all of our social media as well. And we get it out to make sure that you can download it for off of the social media.
That's right. And what a great segment that was.
That was. I mean, I love New York City. I opened the Home Depots up there. I spent a lot of time up there. My family still lives there. And to hear such hope and great
city.
News for the city coming out
after
of
after Mayor
this.
Eric Adams let down so many people, you know, it feels good.
Well,
but
just
anyways,
the change is good. It's not. I don't even know if it's about the disappointment of other people as much as it is just the change. Excitement.
A lot of Democrats were disappointed with him, but that's okay. That's a different segment. Now we have Miss Tamiko Barber, who's a passionate educator with nearly 30 years of experience teaching in an urban environment. And throughout her career, Tammy has dedicated herself to empowering and inspiring her students and always striving to make the world a better place for the next generation. Tammy's on the phone, and she's going to talk to us about the books she has written, one she's co-authored with someone else, and she's calling in from, was it Pennsylvania, you said, dear?
Yes, I'm right outside of Philadelphia, 10
miles
away.
Wonderful, wonderful. Okay, well, take it away, Tammy. Tell us a little bit about yourself, more about yourself. And in addition to being an educator, you decided to go the other step and take your experience and put it into words and author these books.
Yes, yes. Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me again. My name is Tamiko Barber, but most people just call me Tammy. I'm really shocking myself right now because I am a self-proclaimed introvert. I have siblings, Vernine, Chuck, Chris, and Vicky, and I'm engaged to Brent. Now, I've had the opportunity to do two books. The first book was co-written with Samuel Laurie, who actually passed away last year. And he was very passionate about mental health and people that were addicted to drugs. So for several years, we worked together on The Father's Heart. And it is a story of the prodigal son, updated version of the prodigal son. And in this book, it talks about how families go through like trials and tribulations and downfalls. But it also teaches you to rise above your circumstances and fulfill your goals and desires. And with the Father's Heart, it will help loved ones that have family that are struggling with substance abuse and mental illness. And that book was published in 2019.
And usually, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, usually writing is a cathartic thing, right? So what are some of the things that you had to heal from as we talk about the healing of others?
Yes. So in my book, Broken But Restored, the writing is totally cathartic for me. When I started writing, I was actually writing in journals. I did not intend for this to become a book because I was just going through so many things. I just start writing things down. And it was like for 17 years, I had journals all over my house. Mm-hmm. And then it was like when we were during the pandemic, I was like, okay, we're shut down. Let me just put all these thoughts together. And that's what I did. I put the finishing touches on the book during the pandemic. And as you said, there were many things that I had to heal from. One was, you know, rejection. You know, I had because I was always scared just be myself because I was scared of people rejecting me. Another thing that I had to be healed from was not forgiving people because, you know, we have to realize that people are going to be people and hurt people. But because they hurt you, you have to look at them like, they're coming from a hurting place. So I cannot be mad at them. So that was two things that I had to be healed from. I had to learn how to forgive others, and I had to learn how to put myself in their shoes as well.
Yeah. I do notice that life situations can make a person feel rejected, whether it's a coworker, whether it's a family member, whether it's somebody in the grocery store who just pushed you for no reason. You know, you wake up every day and you're like, okay, I'm alive. I can breathe. I can walk. I'm grateful to God that I'm on the planet. And then it takes one person to do something, and you feel it's like your balloon is inflated when you wake up, and this one person can do something, and boom, you're rejected.
Yeah. Well, and some of it is a self-esteem piece, right? Because when we're healing from things, our self-esteem is not always the highest that it could be. So when events happen and we take that personally on ourselves, it, once again, it's like a hit to the self-esteem. So how do you, you know, coping with that too?
Yeah.
It's a big message that you convey.
In previous years, I used to hold on to it. So now when we have to realize people are going to do things to us, right?
Right.
So now I look at it, I don't hold on to it. You know, I may hold on to it for an hour. I may hold on for 2 hours. I may hold on for a day. But I don't let a day go by because I know how that made me feel in the past.
Like right. In the past, and your faith, Tammy, plays a great part because you find that God restores the wholeness in you again.
Yes, yes, yes. And I'm glad that he did because I'm not the same person that I was 10 years ago. You know, I'm more talkative, you know, I'm willing to go out. Like I'm on your radio station right now. Yeah, I wouldn't have been able to do that 10 years ago because I would isolate myself because once you isolate yourself, you'd be like, okay, there's no one here to hurt me or, you know, reject me at that time. So there's a lot of things. Another thing that I had to be healed from was anxiety. I had a lot of anxiety in my life. It was to the point that I was having heart palpitations. And I was like, okay, you know, and the first thing you go to the doctor, the first thing they ask you are you depressed or are you anxious? And my anxiety was causing flu-like symptoms in my body. And it's just amazing how stress and anxiety can attack your body. And the doctor, she did put me on medication. And I'm not against medication at all. But I was like, okay, Tammy, there's something wrong with you. You need to go back and reevaluate what's going on with you. Yeah. So
now, what does the balm in Gilead mean, and how can we apply the principles to our life?
Yes, yes. So balm in Gilead, there's a story in the Bible. And Gilead is a place in the Bible that is east of the Jordan River. And this place was known for its natural resources and various tribes. I'm not going to get into it too much. But this place was known for its balm. And because it was known for its balm, a lot of doctors lived there. They moved there. And in the Bible, Jeremiah asked the question, is there no balm in Gilead? Because there was a lot of hurting people there. And in order for us to receive that balm in Gilead or that medicine, we have to be restored and we have to acknowledge God and surrender our lives to us because he doesn't want us going around being brokenhearted. He doesn't want us to be rejected. He wants us to be whole in him, and he gives us the tool or the balm in Gilead to heal us.
Yeah.
And we can apply it. I tell people all the time, everyone's process is different. You know, with social media, with Facebook, Instagram, we tend to compare ourselves. And right. You're like, okay, their process is not like mine.
Right. Everything is different, right? But I think in your book, I read a little bit of it online, and what you're doing is you're really helping the reader to navigate through life's challenges, knowing that God is with you, and all you have to do is let him come into your personal space, and he will, but you've got to be willing to have this partner with you to help navigate the challenges.
Yes, yes, yes. You're absolutely correct. Because sometimes we just want to be in control, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can be a kind of control freak, but because of that, I had to learn to allow God to heal me the way he wants me to be healed. And because of that, I can empathize with others. I understand what they're going through.
Right. And so let's talk a little bit about the other novel, A Father's Heart. Now, that should be made into a movie, the way it sounds to me. So this gentleman had the two sons and the wife passed away, and he's got to open up his heart. And he's got to, in some ways, he's got to take the son in And it really makes you feel like this is kind of like the prodigal son. I mean, we all hear about that. I'm Hindu, but I remember hearing about that story in school mm-hmm. because I went to Christian schools, Christian dominated schools. And okay. I always liked that story because it really makes you feel like you could come back into the family with grace and dignity if you're able to stand in faith.
Yes, yes, yes. And it's a modern day version. People that have read it, especially people that have members that were addicted to drugs or have mental illness, it resonated with them. And as I said earlier, it'll teach you how to deal with it. The person that wrote with it, co-wrote the book with, he was a certified drug counselor. So he had a little bit more of the ends on how to help people because, like you said, everyone has their own issues, you know, and just because someone is on drugs or have mental issues, we should not look down on them. We should give them the tools and try to help them. And when they're ready, they'll come to it, just like the prodigal son.
Right. And what I read about it is Bobby, the youngest son, the father noticed that as he became involved with drugs, that a lot of stuff in the house went missing. And that happens in a lot of families, like people, I'm sure, you know, of course, as we get older, we have memory problems, we age, whatever. But there is that family that probably had a little cash stacked away someplace and somebody mm-hmm. found it and took it and bought drugs or whatever. And this father, he knew that. And he knew that there were individuals who was leading his son astray. And like you say, he was in the business of counseling people. But again, you can't judge people. You don't know what's going on. Like my mother used to say, you don't know what's cooking in somebody else's pot.
Yes. Well, I like that. Yes. You never know what's going through. Absolutely. Yeah.
And the circumstances are different for everybody, too. I mean, some people nobody wakes up in the morning and says, you know, this week I think I'll become a drug addict or I'll become homeless. Yes. Like nobody does that.
Yeah.
Everybody wakes up in the morning with the best intentions of trying to live their life. I really do believe that.
Well, it's a blessing to wake up. But you know, at the same time, you know, you touch on something there, Ellen. You know what? And a family members, we know a lot of families know what to do and they do try to reach out. But it's really up to that person to accept mm-hmm. that you're reaching out and restore your soul back to wholeness again. Right. So, Tammy, what message do you hope to convey to people who are reading your books? Because what I'm getting out of it is a lot of forgiveness and a lot of soul searching in Christ.
Yes. So what I want to convey to people, because like we said, there are so many hurting people in this world. And when I see people that are hurting, like I immediately want to help them, but sometimes I just stand back because I see that they're angry, that they're depressed, and as they may even isolate their themselves. I just want to give a quick story. I had a brother, Chucky, that died of cancer. And, you know, we were brought up in the church. You know, he was on drugs at one point. He did drink a lot at one point. And I tried to get him to come back to church. And he looked at me and said, Tammy, I am not like you all. And when he said that, that hurt me to the core. And when he said that, I was like, what could I have done, you know, to help him to understand that, you know, God loves him regardless. And I just want to tell people, just give them hope in everything that they do. God loves you, broken and all. We don't have to be perfect. Like I said, this social media portrays a lot that everyone has these perfect lives, and they don't. And I want people to know that, you know, wherever you are, we can meet you where you are.
Right. And, you know, talking about social media, you know, you're right. Sometimes we'll put stuff up, but oftentimes I put stuff on social media, but I always have like a message with it, you know, like I'll say it's like, and if people who know me, they'll know it's a message, but I don't think sometimes I'll put a post that's, you know, my friend found faith in something. People don't want to read about good things like that. But if you write, oh, there's a big fight going on, they all want to read it, you know. They like drama. But I want to say that in 2013, the late Deacon Sam Laurie, he handed you a book of skits to utilize in your Sunday school class. And believe it or not, he prompted you to start writing because you started, right? You had a passion for plays and you started writing several plays. So did he know that he created a genius by handing you that book and say, hey, Tammy, write a few skits for the church? And you did. You went ahead and you wrote some skits for the church.
I did. And this spring, I actually put on a play for people to actually pay to come to see. So he was the one that ignited that passion inside of me because I had no interest in writing, to be honest with you. That was one of the least subjects that I did not like in school, believe it or not. But he ignited that passion within me that I did not know that I had. And like I said, this spring in March was the first time that I put on a play for people to come see and pay for it. And I had close to 300 people there. So I have to give all honor to him because he's the one that ignited that passion in me.
Right. And it comes across in your books that you want people to go from being broken to restored. I mean, your message is quite concise that we all come into this world and we don't know. My mother had a saying, what didn't meet you didn't pass you. You know, my mother did not go to college or even she had to quit school at third grade. But boy, we could write a book about the kind of things she used to tell us, which is like, for example, when they were talking about money, she would say, don't hang your hat where you can't reach it. It means don't spend $2 if you only have 50 cents, you know.
Someday there's going to be a Nanny Raj book.
A book, right? but I find with you, you have a message and you are so embedded in your faith. And I'm sure somewhere along the line you had lost part of that, but you found it and now you want to share that with the whole world.
Yes. And I just want people to know, don't be embarrassed or ashamed of your, what I call spiritual scar. Because sometimes we are embarrassed by what things that we go through. But and when you look at it, those things that you go through will make you become a stronger person. Like I've dealt with grief. You know, I unexpectedly lost my mom in 2008. And because of that process, I'm able to help others, you know, give advice through their grieving process.
Yeah. And so tell us, where is your book sold and how can people connect with you?
My book can be found on Amazon. You can connect with me. I don't have a website yet. You gave me an idea of having a website now, but you can connect with me on Tammy Barber on Facebook. I do have a business page also on Facebook, Broken But Restored. My email address is brokenbutrestored7@gmail.com. And the book can be purchased through Amazon.
Yeah. So what is your favorite part about being a writer, Tammy? And for our listeners who are tuning in, I mean, her books, Tamiko Barber's books, has great reviews on Amazon and other sites. So tell us, what is your favorite part about being a writer?
My favorite part about being a writer, believe it or not, is the research, because I try to add research to what I'm saying to give it some validity with it. My other favorite part, as you talked about at the beginning, is cathartic for me. Sometimes I cry while I'm writing. Being an introvert, we don't talk a lot. Like this conversation that we have, introverts love deep conversations like this. We don't do a lot of small talk. So the writing is cathartic for me. And I know with my writing, I know that I can help others become whole with whatever they're going through.
That's beautiful. But, you know, Tammy, what are some of the most surprising things that you learned about yourself when writing your books?
Learning about myself, the most surprising thing was how of a control freak that I was. I was like, I've heard people say that to me, but I was like, and when I start doing the inner work, it actually showed me, okay, this is something that you need to work on.
And I think sometimes too, you get into that mode of you hear other people say, they made me feel this way about a certain thing, or somebody made me feel this way. And then you start realizing because of the work that you've done that nobody can make you feel anyway. It's your reaction.
Yeah.
It's it's you own that, you know, so that control freak kind of puts the mirror on yourself.
Yes, yes, yes. You're absolutely right. And I just also had to learn just how to, with being a control freak, how to just trust the process. Like everything does not have to be perfect.
Yeah. And you know, that's something that a lot of us have to work on, right? And, you know, sometimes you look at the young generation and you want to go up to them and say, hey, let me show you the way. I have been there before. I have the experience. I can lead you. But some people just don't let you. You know, I was having this conversation with someone this morning about certain cultures where the elderly is placed in such high esteem, you know, because people go to the elderly for advice. They ask them. And in so many cultures, the young people don't want to hang out with the older people and learn something, right? And here you are, you learned it and you're putting it in a book and hoping that people buy this book and read it and learn something and make a better life for themselves.
Yes.
You know, that's what it's all about, right?
Yes, it is. It is. It is. We just have to learn how to trust God in the process.
Right. So, Tammy, do you have any tips for upcoming writers or bloggers who are just stuck in writer's block and they're like, gosh, I can't get started?
When you feel as though you have a writer's block, just take a break. You know, just take a break from it and then revisit it. You may revisit it next month. You may revisit it next year. And also, another piece of advice is I don't want people to become discouraged because I published this book in 2021. And now, finally, this year, I'm getting the traction for this book. In the last year or so, I've been on like 3 or 4 podcasts. I've been invited to be on like a table talk. I just don't want people to be discouraged at the beginning. You know, don't give up your dreams. You keep pushing and you keep fighting and doors will continue to open for you.
And, you know, we're living in a time when so many people feel like they're still being judged for their race and skin color and religion. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of hate and division. And politically, we've got the right against the left and the people in the middle are left out. But your book, you did an amazing job by prescribing the biblical context and letting it be right there for real life situation to heal people and restore them. And I think that's beautiful.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate you having me on your radio station today.
Well, and it's so important that our listeners understand that too, that all of these experiences, especially the things that you read like this, you know, that really inspire you. Hopefully they pass it on.
And everything she does is in the freedom of Jesus Christ.
That's right.
Who she believes in. And so tell us in 30 seconds what you can, well, 20 seconds, anything you want to say about your Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, we'll take it.
I just want to say that God will meet you where you are. It doesn't matter what you have done or what you thought you had done. He will meet you where you are, and God loves you for who you are.
Amen. We'll make sure we get all of the information out so that you can purchase these books and get more connected with Tammy and more connected with her work. And thanks, everyone, again, for tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Here we are on each and every Monday here on 1510 WWBC. You can go to that.com and get our archives for all the shows you can download, as well as all of our social medias under Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Thanks again, everybody. We'll see you next week. Thank you.